Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Guess what? I have another question for you. Have you ever felt like you're surrounded by people who don't really know who you are? In today's broadcast, we look at the familiar story of Jesus healing the son of a high-ranking state official. Once we look between the lines of Scripture, we begin to see Jesus in a new light, which reflects back to us something about our own heart. Join me now as we see beyond the second miracle into the lonely inner experience of exile, where we are known only by what we can do for others and not who we really are. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back for another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. I'm an online pastor, author, and uncoach, and I would like to welcome you to this week's program. Whether you're listening online, whether you're streaming this on a podcast, or whether you're listening to the radio station live in the Denver metro area, I'd like to welcome you to the program and welcome to Sunday. You know, when you listen to listener-supported radio, you become really used to the folks getting on and saying, please, please, please support our radio program. Well, as an online pastor, I don't have a lot of overhead. I don't have a building. I don't have a lot of other extraneous expenses that I need to take care of. And so I can afford this radio program, and I can bring this ministry right to you. But in order for me to continue doing that, I need to know that you're listening. I want to hear from you. So can you do me a favor? Can you go to kevinwinder.com, K-E-V-E-N, I spell my name like the number 7, go to kevinwinder.com and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter where you can interact with me every single week. You'll get this content sent directly to your inbox. You'll have access to well over 2 years of podcasts, 6 years of blog posts, and every single radio broadcast and anything else that comes along. So I want to invite you to do that. Go to kevinwinder.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield. Do it today, and I'll be so glad if you do. Well, folks, we're taking a look at very familiar Bible stories with the hopes of being able to hear them again for the very first time. Now, if that sounds like I'm saying a bunch of doublespeak, then I really need you to kind of tune in here. You see, we get so kind of tired and worn out in the sense that we've heard some of these Bible stories so many times, we almost wonder if we'll ever hear anything new. And so it's my goal and my desire to bring something and reflect something back to you that perhaps you've heard some of this before, but I think what you're going to hear in this series is content that you haven't heard before. And the reason is as an online pastor, I don't have to make sure my core base is not offended. I don't have to, pander in any way. I simply have to let the content be what it is, and it gives me a space to do the hermeneutical process in a new way. And so I hope that the result is that you're hearing these Bible stories again for the very first time, because you're seeing them through a new lens. And last week, we looked at Jesus' first miracle, the turning of water into wine. Today, we're going to look at his second miracle, called his second sign, where he heals the official's son. And the title of today's program is called When Others Don't See You. When Others Don't See You. And so we're finding this story in the book of John, chapter 4, verses 43 through 54. And like I said, it depicts Jesus' second sign. And with a casual reading, it's simply a story of Jesus healing a man's son. I mean, there's really nothing more to it. There's a few other nuances about the timing of that healing, but it really takes a closer examination before something bigger emerges, which I hope is going to resonate within you. And you see, many of you write me, and you share with me your journey and your story. And we've each come to know the exile of following the voice of God within us. Now, this voice of God within us, sometimes we don't define it that way. You may not feel it as the voice of God. You may not even use a kind of theological or even a religious framework for this. But deep inside of us, there's this deep yearning. Scripture calls it a groaning or even a cry. But there's this cry within us that has this expanding effect on our life. It's just something that's just unsettling. It's just deep. It's a yearning, a hope, a cry, a groaning. I can't really put words around it. And unfortunately, the institutions in which we find ourselves are usually not as flexible, and therefore they can't expand with us as this cry starts to pull us out of where we are. And Mark 2:22 talks about the new wine and the old wineskin. It's a great metaphor because the new wine begins to pressurize the old wineskins of our life until some sort of rupture actually appears. And this can be all kinds of ruptures and fractures and breaks. And these are huge pain points and disillusionment. And usually their way, it's parting of ways among friends or organizations. But you see, it's integrity to the cry within us that ultimately requires us to leave some group, some organization. And that is the voice of God calling us out. Okay. Now, from the outside looking in, if you're a part of the institution looking at you, then it's just going to appear as if you are the problem, right? It was you who couldn't fit in. It's you who couldn't remain agreeable, right? It was you who couldn't cut it. And, you know, some event, something happened that revealed you to be the dissident. And so now you've been marginalized or you've been put on the sidelines. You know, the old system just cannot tolerate new questions that are emerging within you. This cry, this groaning, this longing, this search, this hope for something better, this knowing that life can be incrementally better than it is today. That thing that's drawing you out pressurizes you within a system that just can't tolerate those new emerging questions. And when you get there, I just want to say welcome to the exile. I've been here a long time, and I kind of see myself as the concierge. I've been here in 6 years doing a ministry called Thrive in Exile. And I'm just here to point you in the right direction. Once you leave, you feel a little alienated and lost and scared and uncertain and almost fearful, so much so that many turn around and go back because the fear of the unknown is much greater than where they came from. But here in the desert, you're going to find your true self, I promise. It's not an easy journey, but you are no longer going to hold on to that pseudonym, that fake ID that the institution gave you throughout your life. I mean, that person that you are creating there is not really you. You know that, right? You really know that. I mean, you aren't your job title. You're not your income. You're not your W-2 or your zip code. You are not your denomination. You are not your theological belief, you know, and you are not the people whom you associate with. You see, you're waking up to this knowing of who you really are, and it's kind of a painful process, and it's most certainly a lonely process. You feel like, who can I talk to? Who can I relate to? I mean, face it, you're the weirdo now. You're the outcast if the institution is looking at you. But let me just remind you, you're a blessed outcast now. Now, while your family or your community or your church or your religion or your institution, they might reject you or diminish you, it's my hope that you'll be comforted as you witness this story playing out in your very life. And that's why I have taken the time to kind of cue this up the way I did. Now, in verse 44 of this passage that we're talking about, Jesus says, a prophet is without honor in his hometown. And the statement by Jesus is kind of a GPS coordinate for his state of being, which is exile. He's basically saying, man, people don't get me. Now, people are enamored with all the externals, and certainly back in Jesus' day, they were all thrilled with all his performances. Institutions and communities, they love to validate the performance, don't they? In fact, that's what they come to expect. This is how you're to behave when you're here. And in Jesus' hometown, I mean, they all saw him turn water into wine in chapter 2. I mean, it says in verse 45 that they'd all gone to the feast. And so his fame was spreading. There's something about this Jesus guy who's different than everybody else. And so you need to really pay attention. You know, this is interesting. You know, trick ponies are known by their tricks. And perhaps his community grew up way too close to Jesus. I mean, they shared his upbringing. But somehow they missed his very life. Do you ever feel like that? Do you feel like you're surrounded by people, loved ones, friends who kind of share a similar life experience, but they kind of miss who you really are? You see, true loneliness is to be surrounded by friends and family and remain unknown. And that's what Jesus is saying when a prophet is without honor in his hometown. You ever feel that way? Now, when Jesus returned to Galilee, it says in verse 45 that he was welcomed. And so how does this fit with the dishonor that a prophet faces in his hometown? Well, this is kind of the reading between the lines. You see, Jesus' own community, his family, his friends, they knew what he did. They didn't know who he was. And they didn't honor or value him, only what he could do for them. And so it's that typical, stereotypical, unwelcoming welcome, right? It's that external display, perhaps even a cultural gesture that we've all experienced when we go to certain gatherings, maybe at a church or a religious institution, maybe at certain fancy places where protocol is to be expected. I mean, it seems nice on the surface, but that kind of makes the disconnect so loud because it just feels very fake or contrived. And I think that's what Jesus is getting at. And so when this royal official, the state official, comes to Capernaum, requesting that Jesus heal his son, Jesus immediately recognizes his motives. And so he says in verse 48, Jesus says, "Well, unless you see the signs and wonders, you will not believe." And John doesn't really record Jesus as having healed anyone else. So how did the high official know that the healing was even on the menu of possibilities? You see, he saw Jesus as his chance. He was desperate, and he heard that this man could do things. He turned water into wine, and he has a sick child, and he's just desperate. So he traveled the nearly 30 miles to where Jesus was, hoping to bring Jesus 30 miles back to heal his son. And he saw Jesus as his chance. It was his desperate need to save his child's life. And I mean, who could really blame him? I mean, when your own loved one is sick and perhaps dying, very little else comes into view. You see, our own need makes us self-focused. And when we're self-focused, we miss others, don't we? You see, royal officials often expect royal treatment. And so he wanted Jesus to travel the 27 miles back with him. But instead, Jesus just tells him in verse 53, "Go. Go. Your son lives. Your son shall live." You see, this is not a warm engagement with all the formalities. Jesus was not impressed with his position or his status. You know, the official was kind of likely wondering if Jesus was just brushing him off. I mean, nonetheless, he went. I mean, he's desperate. He wants his son to be healed, and he's like, "Just go, your son's healed." Well, how do you know? He had to have some measure of faith and just kind of go on it. And on his way back, he ran into his servants who confirmed that his son was healed precisely at the same time that Jesus told him to go. You see, now here's what's interesting is that grace kind of bubbles up to the surface in this story. And that's really amazing to me. I mean, Jesus meets this guy right at his point of need. And while Jesus might have been disappointed and somewhat dishonored with this unwelcoming welcome, he nonetheless honors the request. It's like he's saying, look, you came for a treat. Well, here's your treat. You can have your treat. Or you wanted to see the trick. Here's the trick. And it's probably only when that ranking official is miles away does he potentially get a glimpse of who Jesus really is. You see, to know and to be known is the most intimate expression of love. And lovemaking typifies this in the physical sense, but it's also true in non-physical relationships as well. We all know that sexuality is diminished when we take what we want from others and we use them. And throughout Scripture, our base level of engagement with Jesus is to use him for what we want. And we see that throughout the Scripture. And the people there are no different than us. I mean, so much of modern Christianity has turned Jesus into exclusively a salvation project, which is the evacuation from earth plan, which really is another way of saying it's fire insurance. And it's all about what we want. It's not about who he is. And see, this is understandable since we're creatures that really need to learn how to love. And getting to what love desires of us means that we have to ultimately get over ourselves. And for the most part, that's almost impossible. I mean, most of us really need to get over ourselves, and we just struggle to do it. We can't get out of our own way, of our own needs and our own self-preoccupation. You see, Jesus exemplifies this with a tremendous move of grace. I mean, he's holding nothing back. He freely gives of himself and allows others to satisfy their needs from him. Now, what kind of king serves like this? I mean, he knows that once our most pressing needs are satisfied, we will be able to go deeper. But sometimes you can't go deeper until the wider has been sorted out. And all of our spiritual journeys start by asking for God's hand. We need his help. We want his power. We want something to help us along. But ultimately, the spiritual journey needs to progress into asking for God's face. But some never progress. And God remains this unknown servant. You know, in John 8:19, he says, you neither know me nor do you know my Father. If you knew me, you'd know my Father also. And so Jesus finds himself again in this kind of lonely exile. I think that's why he often left the crowds and went off by himself into the wilderness. You see, the cry of the exile is one of homesickness. And I think you and I have felt that from time to time, if we're honest. It's only satisfied by knowing and being known. Every other external thing is really just an empty vapor that's going to fade. The grace of God to act first is revolutionary, folks. You see, all religions paint God as reactionary, you know, and so the whole religious structure is based on if you do this, then God will like you. If you say these prayers, if you sing these songs, if you attend these services, God is going to join your team. But you see, Jesus flips the script here and he subverts that idea. By healing the official's son, he demonstrates that he will love us whether or not we learn how to love. Whether our love or our interest in him is based solely on ourselves does not matter. He responds gracefully, lovingly, generously. You see, he knows the difference between what we think we want and what we really want, and unconditionally provides both, but we just need to ask. See, and that's where this comes full circle, folks. That deep longing, that moaning, that cry within us that is beckoning us to come out, to go out, to get free. It turns out to not be us at all. It's the cry of love. It's the cry of love seeking a face in which to gaze. It's the yearning to know, and it's the yearning to be known. See, not to be known as anything other than what we truly are would be amazing. And I think deep down, we all know that. There's something uniquely special and dialed in about who we are and what we know that makes us who we are. And we don't even fully know it ourselves, but we kind of intuit it. We sense it. And after a while of going around through life, trying on all these masks and personas, trying on all the, well, maybe I'll be this guy now. Maybe I'll be this girl now. Until one day you just sit quietly and you realize your friends and your family and your people, they don't really know you. A prophet is without honor in his hometown. And you realize that you long for something. You long to be known. You long to be loved for who you are. And you long to love. But you see, it all goes circle, full circle. We need to learn how to love as well. And not to be known as anything other than what we truly are, that's the gift. And whatever we may think we really are, it's the very place where grace says to you, go. Your son is healed. Go. It's good. Go. Right? So whatever that persona is, whatever that point of need is, whatever you actually think you are, whoever you actually think you are, whoever I actually think I am, whether I'm actually myself or I'm still living in under my fake ID, grace says, go. I've got you. I'm taking care of you. But if we listen to that voice within, that voice is going to call us on. And the question is, will we go on with the distraction of our needs? Or will we stay long enough to welcome love and to finally be known? Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today. Hi, it's Kevin Winder. And did you know coaching is not just for athletic performance anymore? The world is learning how we learn from one another, and life coaching is at the center of this transformation. We used to just call it pastoral care, but now coaching is multidimensional. Did you realize that 90% of coaching operates on the principle that if you are able to do more, accomplish more, or have more, then you will get to be more? Well, that's why I'm the uncoach. Contrary to the world, our doing doesn't create our being. Instead, it's our being that creates our doing. Uncoaching is then counterintuitive. You can always have anything you think you want by ascending or climbing or striving, but you can only have what you really want by first descending, emptying, and waking up to who you really are. So if your life is stuck, plateaued, or just really confusing, then contact me today. I never charge for coaching, but I have a limited amount of space. So if you want to go deeper for the sake of rising up, then contact me, the uncoach, at kevinwinder.com.